morning, Your Honors. My name is Brian Gish, appearing here for petitioner TNA Merchant Projects, who is the successor in interest to Chehalis Power Generating. I've already asked the clerk to reserve about 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. That's appropriate. Congress provided that there are two distinct types of rate filings under the Federal Power Act, an initial rate filing and a changed rate filing.
While you're on that, I have a question that goes to the standard of review. Each of the parties, and to an extent the intervener, argue this as an arbitrary and capricious case. It seems that the issue is entirely the interpretation of the words of a statute to an initial rate. Why isn't this a Chevron review rather than an APA review, as far as the standard of review is concerned?
Well, I don't think Chevron would be appropriate at all. I don't think...
You understand the first word of my question was why. And telling me you don't think that doesn't advance my ball any. I read your brief. I know that you think the standard of review is arbitrary and capricious. But isn't the issue here whether the agency correctly interpreted the phrase, the two words, initial rate?
I believe this court clearly set out what the interpretation of the statute is. I don't think there is room for FERC to add its gloss or its interpretation.
That would tell me that FERC would lose under the Chevron standard. It wouldn't tell me why Chevron isn't the appropriate standard. And if you don't have an answer, maybe you don't have an answer, and I'll let you alone on that subject. Then I'll see if FERC can add. Respondent actually mentioned Chevron.
Yeah, well.
The other two of you seem, it's not even cited in the briefs, which is very rare for us to get to an administrative law brief that doesn't cite Chevron. It's kind of refreshing, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, well, let me answer some more. This is not an issue that Chevron deals with cases where Congress left a gap for the agency to fill.
Mm-hmm.
Congress here did not leave a gap for the agency to fill.
Well, that's rather narrowing what Chevron does. Chevron governs the review of agency interpretations of statutes. At the first stage, we ask whether Congress has left a gap. If it hasn't, then the agency loses to step one unless they have complied with Congress's plain wording. That's the first step of Chevron, but it's still Chevron. The second step then says if there's ambiguity, did they interpret it reasonably? So it would seem to me your argument would be that Chevron applies, but the agency loses to step one. But apparently I'm not going to get anywhere with that line of questioning, so I will let you alone and pursue that on my own.
I don't think there's any room here for deference to the commission on this jurisdictional statutory basis of what the FERC's power is.
Shouldn't that be the end of the case then? Hmm. I'm not throwing you a hostile question.
All right, well, thank you. This court on three occasions, in Florida Power versus FERC, in Middle South versus FERC, and in Southwestern versus FERC, plainly held that there was a distinction in the Federal Power Act between initial rates and changed rates. In fact, Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg, when she was on this court, explicitly told FERC that it would be unlawful for FERC to define the initial rate category so restrictively that it virtually disappeared. In this case, FERC unlawfully made the initial rate category disappear.
Now, which case was that you were just referring to?
That's the Southwestern case versus FERC.
Thank you.
FERC freely admits, as this court has clearly held, that it has no statutory authority to impose a refund obligation on a public utility that files an initial rate under Section 205. So that's not an issue in this case. FERC simply refuses to find that any rate schedule that comes before it is an initial rate, and has not, to my knowledge, found anything to be an initial rate for at least 20 years. FERC's rationale in this case relies on unsupportable and statutorily irrelevant factual assertions in its continuing attempt to read the initial rate concept out of the Federal Power Act.
You the facts here are pretty. Citation to that language from Judge Ginsburg that you just gave?
I'm sorry, where is it?
The language that you just gave to Judge Ginsburg, from Judge Ginsburg, is that in your brief?
Don't know if we put that in our brief or not. It's in the case that we cited in Southwestern.
I have it. It's at 810 F second at 292.
Thank you. The facts here are pretty simple. Chehalis commenced operation of its power plant in 2003. Most power plants similar to the Chehalis plant are capable of producing a power product known as reactive power. Chehalis and several other power plant owners that were connected to the Bonneville Power Administration transmission system entered into a settlement agreement with Bonneville, where Bonneville agreed to compensate them for reactive power. The settlement agreement provided that Chehalis may make a, quote, initial rate filing, close quote, under Section 205 of the Federal Power Act to establish its first ever rates for the sale of reactive power.
Can I pause over this for a moment? I can't tell whether you're really arguing that you never provided reactive power before or simply arguing that it wasn't in the record. What is your position about that?
No. Well, no, we never provided, we never sold reactive power. We never had.
Ask about whether you sold. Ask about whether you provided. I think you have an argument that there's no evidence in the record that you were providing.
That's right. There's no evidence in the record that any reactive power actually was produced from the plant and went to BPA.
And the letter from the Davis-Wright Tremaine firm that begins at JA1, what about that? What's your answer to that?
There is one line in that letter, I guess if you have the JA site there, that states, you know, Exhibit B of the generator interconnection agreement requires Chehalis to file a voltage schedule and provide reactive power support. That is the sum total of what FERC relies on as its evidence for what is in the interconnection agreement.
There's also JA-10, which is the attachment and the rate schedule, which says Chehalis provides reactive supply and voltage control.
Okay. That rate schedule is dated the effective date of the rate schedule, August 1. As of August 1, Chehalis is providing, that says Chehalis provides reactive power to BPA. It doesn't say Chehalis provided it before August 1, 2005. It says as of the date of the rate schedule.
It doesn't say as of the date. It
I'm sorry.
It just says what it says. It doesn't say as of the date. You're adding those words.
Well, it says provides. You're right. The rate schedule, I think, is dated August 1.
But it's issued on May 31st, 2005, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. That was the date. That's right.
And
the date the date we filed it was May 31st. The effective date that FERC made it go into effect was August 1st, 2005. So when it says provides, it does not say it had been providing before that time. It just says provides. That's the rate schedule. That is what it is being compensated for, the fact that it provides reactive power. So that does not support in any way FERC's contention that it had been providing reactive power for 2 years before we filed the rate schedule or whatever FERC is contending. And you know, the same thing with the statement in the Transmetal letter.
You're not representing to us as a matter of fact that there was that you were not providing it.
No. I don't know.
Quite frankly,
I do not know. It's not in the record. It was never in the record. And quite frankly, I do not know what was happening at the plant. I don't know where electrons were going before that, and FERC doesn't either.
But it certainly establishes that there was an interconnection agreement under which
this statement does indicate there was an interconnection agreement, yes. And it gives a very vague and broad description of what was an obligation under the interconnection agreement.
Well, when it was before FERC, did you make this argument that we've never provided Bonneville with reactive power?
I'm sorry, I really didn't hear.
Before FERC, did you tell FERC, we've never provided reactive power to Bonneville?
When we filed our rate schedule, I don't think we said that because we had no reason to say that at that point. We said that, of course, in this case, but when we first filed our rate schedule, there was no reason to affirmatively make that statement.
How about at rehearing? I mean, are we really looking at something where it's true that you've never provided reactive power? And that's another question. How do you not know whether you have or not?
I, as the attorney, don't. I suppose the engineers at the plant may have known.
Your client, then.
The client, yes.
The client doesn't know if it's provided reactive power to Bonneville before 2005?
Reactive power is a difficult power product to understand, from what I understand. It's not something like real power, where you generate and something goes over the wire. Reactive power is something that the generator can produce when requested. I do not know whether it had been requested before the date of the service. But, I mean, that really, that point, and what we've always considered that point, is irrelevant, because the only thing a Section 205D rate change applies to is a rate schedule that had been previously in effect under Section 205C. And whatever was happening before we filed our rate schedule, in this case, was not a Section 205C service. There was no rate, there was no terms and conditions associated with it. There is nobody that argues in this case that we should have had a Section 205C rate schedule on file for anything we were doing before we filed this first rate schedule for reactive power. So regardless of what you want to call what was happening before we filed the rate schedule, it was not in, nothing was a 205C rate schedule that could be changed under Section 205D. There was simply nothing. So when FERC, this is just a red herring that FERC has thrown up by speculating that this service, though without charge, was being provided, and therefore that is some foundation for a change in rates. It's just simply legally does not have any bearing, because for it to be any kind of change in rate, there would have had to been a 205C rate schedule on file. There wasn't. Nobody claimed there had to be. So there just could not be a 205D at all, regardless of what happened before.
So you're saying they misinterpreted the statute?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, isn't that a Chevron argument? Isn't that a Chevron argument?
Well,
there are essentially a Chevron argument without seeming so, if I could paraphrase.
Okay. I would just assert that there's absolutely no room for deference to the agency here.
Isn't that a Chevron 1 argument then? When you have the plain wording of the statute and you're saying they misinterpreted the statute, that's Chevron 1. That's the first step of Chevron, that they've misinterpreted it because they didn't have room for interpretation.
I think if there's an ambiguity or a gap in the statute,
then you get to Chevron 2.
Right.
But they don't get there under your argument. Your argument is they misinterpreted the statute.
Well, my argument is the statute is plain and clear on its face. And that,
therefore,
there you
win at Chevron 1.
You end at
Chevron. But I don't understand why you think this is an arbitrary and capricious APA review when all we're talking about, or precisely what we're talking about, is statutory interpretation.
It is statutory interpretation. That's right. It is statutory interpretation. FERC's attempt to explain what it did is arbitrary and capricious because there's absolutely no foundation or basis for it. That's where I came into the arbitrary and capricious. So thank you. I'd like to reserve the remaining part of my time.
Whatever's left.
May it please the Court. We didn't emphasize Chevron because this was presented as
you didn't cite Chevron. You not only didn't emphasize it, you.
We were certainly reacting to the argument that was made by petitioner, and I think what we said was that if you got into statutory construction, then Court has said in the past, in the Southwestern case and in the Middle South case, and the Judge Ginsburg's opinion, that the statute does not define what's an initial rate and what's a changed rate. And that's exactly the basis on which Southwestern was decided. It's a classic Chevron situation. If we're arguing about the statute, we didn't really understand that petitioner was arguing that the statute was violated. To the extent they did, we said this has already been resolved by the court.
Can I ask about this? This is puzzling me. So the Petitioner's argument is that the word such rate in 205D refer to the rate referred to in 205C, right?
That's right.
Right. And they argue that below.
Right.
In front of FERC, right? And they argue that the rate in C is a rate that has been filed. Every public utility shall file, right? They made that argument, right?
Right.
And they also made the argument that this is consistent with 18 CFR 35.1B, which says a rate, with some ellipses, a rate schedule other than that which proposes to change the provisions of a rate schedule or tariff required to be on file shall be filed as initial rate, right?
Right.
I don't see a response to that argument in FERC's opinion or rehearing.
Well, the commission recognized...
Following it the way I just said, which is that D is a reference to C as confirmed by the regulation. Where is that responded to? Well, actually, to be fair, where is that responded to you in your brief as well as in the opinion?
Well, the way the commission approached this case was that it knew that there was an interconnection agreement on file, by the way, under which reactive power was provided. That's routine part of interconnection agreements.
All right, let's hold on. Was that on file under as provided by C?
No, but it was required to be on file.
It was required to be on file.
Absolutely, Your
Honor.
Okay,
so then my question is, where do they say that? That would be, a good argument. I don't see that in FERC's opinion or in your brief.
Well, I think to the extent that...
Well, let's first start on the facts.
Okay.
Is it referred to... That argument, that statement which you just made, which was the next question I was going to ask, which is this something that is required to be on file? Does FERC's opinion say that anywhere?
It does not, but...
Hold for 1 second. You'll get a chance to get to the butt.
Sorry.
And for yourself, did you say that in your brief?
I don't think we... we certainly said it was required to be on file.
Where did you say that? This is what's been puzzling me, so if I missed it, that might help my puzzle, but... It would seem like if FERC has an answer, that has to be the answer, that it should have been on file but wasn't.
Well, but, I think I'll find it in our brief, yeah. But I think to the extent that FERC didn't address it in detail, you were going against a background of a whole bunch of cases about interconnection agreements.
We'll pause over that for 1 second. When you say FERC didn't address it in detail, FERC didn't address it at all, right?
It addressed the regulations.
It said that we get to interpret our regulations however we want, but it didn't say that this is something that should have been on file, right?
It did not say that in the order.
Or the order on rehearing, either one.
No, it just said that this is an interconnection agreement, and therefore the service is being provided under that agreement.
Right.
And
right.
Now they're trying to charge a rate for it, so it's not an initial rate for an initial customer.
Right. Now, so when you say that our opinions say that there's a lot of room for FERC to define it and that it's not defined in the statute, none of these respond to a situation like this one where there was nothing on file at all to begin with and where an argument was made, like they're making here, that it, because it wasn't on file, it's not... an initial rate.
That wasn't, if you go back and look at the rehearing, I don't think that was really the focus of the argument. When you look at the rehearing request, and to the extent we've had a moving target in this case.
Now let's get the JA page on what you're looking at now.
Yes, sir. JA 123
okay.
Is the beginning. And then in the discussion, it's starting at JA 124 and 125. It talks about, the Chehalis tells us about Middle South and Florida Power, which the commission was well aware of, doesn't mention the regulations.
You're saying they didn't make an argument that because it didn't file, there can't be a rate change?
No, they did not make that specific argument.
Let me refer you then to, it's like cross-examination, let me refer you to JA 134, which is the FERC order on rehearing. Paragraph 5, stating Chehalis' argument. Thus, because it did not file a schedule pursuant to Schedule 205C for the reactive power it previously provided, it maintains there can be no rate change under the FPA.
Well, it certainly mentioned. I mean, if you look
at an entire paragraph of FERC's own opinion describing.
Well, it was describing how it was reading the
Chehalis' argument, but it didn't answer that argument. This is a part.
Chehalis, maybe not in precise terms, but in page JA-127, you have the discussion of what such rate means. This argument seems to be at least lurking in the rehearing request.
I think it's certainly lurking, but I think that the commission was writing against the background of the Southwestern case, 20 years of policy where we have made this determination.
So either of you cite the Southwestern case, the judicial opinion in Southwestern in your briefs, either you or petitioner. Petitioner, it's not in the table of authorities of either of you when it was first raised in an oral argument here a moment ago by your opposing counsel.
We cite it. It's on Roman 3, Southwestern Electric Power.
Isn't that?
At 4 and 15, and we cite.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And we asterisk the remand from Southwestern was where we really.
Back, you do have it.
Right, but our opinion reversed FERC.
Yeah.
And the remand was never affirmed, so I'm not sure.
No, but the court said, well, look, you have to show that something is you have a lot of discretion to determine this is a technical matter. Is something an initial rate or a change rate? Statute doesn't address it. So if you give enough reasons, we'll uphold you under Chevron.
Right, but the argument that we're talking about here is really the identical argument that Judge Bork addressed in Middle South, almost the identical argument. In that case, he focused on the word such in deciding whether how to read subpart E, whether any such new schedule, and he said, well, the word such means it's a reference to the previous section D where the word new schedule is used. Here they're basically making the same argument that in D is the word any such rate, and that's a reference to the word rate in C.
Right, but when you look at C, and this court has certainly, and the commission have talked about this in some detail, when you look at C, it doesn't just say rate. Rate is shorthand. Rate, the schedules that must be filed at the 824DC, 205C,
yes.
It's called schedules.
Yeah, yeah.
And it says, under such regulations and rules as the commission may provide,
yeah.
Public utility must file schedules showing all rates and charges for any transmission subject to the jurisdiction of the commission, right. And the classifications, practices, regulations affecting such rates and charges, together with all such contracts, like an interconnection agreement, in which any manner affect or relate to any such rates, charges, and classifications.
Right, but subpart D uses the same formula. It says any
exactly.
such rate, charge, classification, or service, thus referring to C. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it has to be a C rate.
Absolutely.
Okay, so now we only have the question of, do you agree that a C rate has to be one that should have been filed?
Yes, I do.
All right, now. So we're getting, so the next question is, where is the argument made, the argument is not made in the opinion by FERC, that this is a rate that should, that the interconnection agreement is a rate that should have been filed, right?
No.
All right, now where, do you make that argument?
The argument that it's in the petitioner's brief, it started talking about more about the interconnection agreement itself. We, in our brief, we answered that and said, look, it's a jurisdictional agreement.
That may be a shorthand which escaped. I understand they reacted to it in the reply brief. Maybe they saw it better than me. But you didn't say that it should have been filed. I mean, do you take the position that all these interconnection agreements, undoubtedly there are many of them out there which are not on file, that they're all in violation?
In fact, this was an early interconnection agreement as the generators started. We had new generators coming online. And under open access. We certainly required them to be on file, and in the interconnection rulemaking, Order 2003, which this court approved in National Association Regulatory Utility Commissioners, The regulation was upheld, and they are required to be on file. It's part of the open access transmission tariff for a transmission provider, and otherwise they're required to be on file.
Were they at the time this interconnection agreement was entered?
We hadn't discussed it in any detail.
So is it a rate that should have been filed, this one?
But by the time that the petitioner here sought reactive power rates, 2003, it was absolutely clear that it was a rate that should have been on
when
file.
When did it become a violation not to have this filed?
Well,
If it should have been filed, and it wasn't filed, then there's a violation, right?
Well, a technical violation. I mean, there are a lot of
When did it become a technical violation?
I think it was a technical violation at the time. It was a jurisdictional agreement.
At the time it was entered?
Yes.
So you're retreating from your earlier answer that it did not have to be filed at the time.
I haven't been given the impression I ever thought it didn't have to be filed. It should have been filed. I can understand there might have been some confusion about it, and it didn't get filed. That doesn't deprive the commission of jurisdiction, and it doesn't change the case.
But really, we're at the Chenery problem here, which is that the commission, you're giving an argument which is very good in the sense of being responsible, and we'll hear what their response is. But since the commission didn't, strikes me, tell me why we're not compelled to send it back to the commission so that they can make the argument in light of our Chenery law that we can't base this on the argument of counsel.
Well, I think when you actually read the rehearing request and you look at how the commission laid out the argument in the discussion section, the commission responded to the arguments that were made. There is a reference to not filing, perhaps, in the rehearing request, but that's certainly not the thrust of it. To the extent they're talking about the statute and how it's interpreted, it was a rehash of Middle South and Southwestern, and the commission answered that in some detail and explained that those cases gave us a lot of discretion, and we.
When you say it's a rehash of Middle South, to the extent that the Middle South point is the use of the word such, there really isn't a response. I see it now that I look to paragraph 6. Now that you've drawn my attention, there is that discussion of 35.1B, which defines, according to paragraph 6 of the opinion, which defines what schedules must be filed. To argue that its rate schedule does not propose to supersede.
The thrust of the petitioner's argument in the rehearing, when you read it fairly, I think, taken as a whole, was it was not paying a rate.
I understand. I think you have a very, I understand that argument, that a zero rate is still a rate. But this is a second argument.
I don't think the petitioners focused on that argument sufficiently that the commission had to give it more attention than it did.
I don't see why not. You answer that as I don't think that. Our questions have a why, either explicit or implicit.
Because the commission was.
And if you look at 127, paragraph 2 of the rehearing request, that's all about Middle South. That's all about the meaning of, quote, such, close quote, rate. And FERC apparently, on some level, understood that to be in there. They do refer to that problem in the opinion.
And then the commission does talk at JA 135, paragraph 10. Discusses Middle South and says that the Middle South Court reaffirmed the latitude the commission has to interpret what constitutes
and a change. And that's about all they said, that the commission has just...
Well, it also cites Southwestern Power and discusses it in some detail. That's the remand where the commission established this policy, and that case does discuss these issues in detail. So it was writing against a background here.
FERC's own Southwestern Power discussed the question of whether a rate that was not on file can be an initial rate?
I don't know. I
don't recollect that.
I'm not sure. It certainly could have come up. It covers the issues about that come up in that context. I don't know for sure. Without going back and looking.
Yeah, and all they say in the opinion at 135 to 136 that you're talking about is we have a lot of flexibility in interpreting our rates, and the well-settled precedent is that an initial rate is one that provides for a new service to a new customer. That itself is subject to the same breadth of interpretation that the statute was before they put it in, that the regulation was before they put it in the opinion. I don't really find anything that answers the question.
I think when the commission, I think it also was looking at interconnection agreements in 2006 terms. It knows that all interconnection agreements on file, that wasn't particularly focused on. The question really was, well, is it a rate? I think that...
Counsel, there's a serious argument here when you can't look and find a rate that this application is going to be changing. There's a serious argument, a serious question to be raised. Is this still to be treated as a change as opposed to initial filing? And we don't find much in FERC's opinion that comes to grip with that.
Well,
I say much advisedly. I'm not sure we find anything that does.
Well,
haven't you at least got a Chenery problem here at the very least?
Interconnection agreement is a term of art. In fact, the interconnection agreements are routinely on file. The commission didn't see that as really being a focus of the
So we're not going to find what
you're not going to find anything
in the opinion, are we?
Well, we're not going. I said right off, it's not in the opinion.
I think your argument is
certainly implied.
Your argument is that the brunt of their argument was, as I think was the brunt of their argument in their brief, that just because the rate was that a zero rate is no rate.
That,
and
yes.
The brunt of the commission's response was no, a zero rate is a rate.
It's providing a service.
And I think there is a direct, obviously, you engaged each other on that. But it's the second argument, which strikes me as the stronger argument for the other side, which is that there's a statutory definition problem here, which our court set up as the way in which to interpret the statute in Middle South, and that's this use of the word such, and that it refers to the requirement. You agree that it does have to be something that was on file or should have been filed.
Required to be filed in terms of regulations,
right.
Implementing regulations. I certainly agree with that, and our point is it should have been on file, and no, the commission didn't address that directly because we didn't feel it was, they raised sufficiently, was addressing the other points. And this is the first time I've heard that Chehalis was not providing a reactive power service. I mean, that was certainly never.
That isn't something that jumps out at me from the briefs as being clearly explained. Now, I'm willing to believe the reason that parties didn't clearly explain it is, in the industry, maybe you understand exactly what reactive power is, and you don't realize that we have cases involving a myriad of industries, so we don't know the details about each of them. Counsel's answer that he doesn't know where the reactive power was being provided is perfectly rational to me. It may be right or it may be wrong, but it...
Something must be new happening on reactive power. This is now my second case on reactive power in just 2 weeks.
I wasn't on the other case.
Right. I don't know what's going on.
What reactive power is did not seem to be an issue.
That creates a problem for us in that because it was not an issue, there's no discussion, and because apparently in the industry it's understood what it is, you don't realize it's necessary for us to find out. But I don't see why you are even mildly surprised that he doesn't know whether they were actually supplying it or not. Reactive power is something that's produced almost as a byproduct.
His client surely knows.
Do you know?
Yes, I do.
How would we find that out from the record?
Well, the reason the commission didn't discuss it, and we don't discuss it in the...
So I can't find it out from the record,
is because Chehalis says it is providing reactive power under the service agreement, under the interconnection agreement. It says that at JA1 and JA10. No one saw that as an issue. It could have been called any kind of power. Reactive power was kind of the MacGuffin in this case. So we were able not to go into a detailed explanation of reactive power. It was a given. So that's how we...
Is it correct, as it seems to be, seems implicit to me at least, that reactive power is sort of a byproduct? It's not something that you don't build plants to produce reactive power.
No, it's an ancillary service under Order 888.
To make the system work.
Yeah, to help. It provides support, voltage support, so the system can work. But, we try and keep our briefs
brief.
brief and not too technical, but we just didn't think there was a...
And I don't know that I thought it was necessary to understand it when I came in here today. But since you are challenging your opposing counsel's statement that he doesn't know, and since he said he doesn't know, actually, I don't know either.
Okay, but all you need to know on that point for this case is that it's on the record that Chehalis admits it's providing reactive power in the interconnection agreement, which should have been on file. And the new rate...
Words should have been on file. Don't appear anywhere in the record, right?
No, they don't.
No, they don't. Not in the record, not in your brief.
Our brief, we unfortunately used a shorthand just saying it's jurisdictional.
Okay.
Jurisdictional interconnection.
That's the best you have that you made this best, argument in your brief?
That's the best I have.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Elizabeth Lobach and I represent Intervenor Bonneville Power Administration. I would like to tell the court where in the record there is evidence that Chehalis was providing reactive service to Bonneville.
Okay.
As the recipient of the service, we were certainly receiving the service before the date of the filing, and Chehalis's filing and testimony support that assertion. I point you to JA-70, which was an exhibit that Chehalis included in its rate filing, in which on number 9 of Schedule 1A, I'll wait till you're there. Number 9 says that the estimated plant peak VAR production during 2004 was 100.0 megavars. 2004 is clearly before the rate was filed, and megavar, MVAR, is measurement of reactive power. In addition, Chehalis states in its rate filing and in its witness.
When was that filed, this rate filing?
It was filed in May of 2005. In the rate filing and in the testimony on JA-2 and JA-41, Chehalis states that the facility was operating as of October of 2003. Now, when a facility operates, it produces real and reactive power. It's impossible for a generator to produce only real power.
You were real good up till then. Now, when you tell us it's impossible for it not to produce reactive power, I have no doubt that you're correct. But I would have had a hard time finding that from what's in front of us. I think I understood that to be the case before you came in, but I didn't understand it very strongly. So you would not say there's anything in the record that plainly tells us that, would you?
If you were engineers, I think it would be clear that, it is clear within the industry that when a generator is operating, it produces both real and reactive power. The orders and the parties don't spend time articulating that because it's a given. It wasn't in dispute.
We've tried for many years to convince counsel in the various fields that we are not engineers or experts in any of the fields.
You can probably tell that from our opinions.
Yeah. Well,
I think we probably have to be electrical engineers to understand that and not just any sort of engineers.
It's quite possible. And Bonneville would like to share with this court that Chehalis' proposed rate was eventually determined to be 2.5 times the just and reasonable rate. And if this court sides with Chehalis, it is Bonneville who would be required to pay an unjust and unreasonable charges. And the primary purpose, or one of the primary purposes, of the Federal Power Act is to protect against that result.
What do you say about, assume we could get over the Chenery problem for a minute. What is the requirement that they should have filed this their original interconnection agreement? Assume we're in sort of the next stage of this case, and that the court thinks that, as FERC counsel also thinks, for this to be a changed rate, there has to be an initial rate, and for there to be an initial rate, it had to be one that should have been filed. What's the grounds for believing that the interconnection agreement was something that should have been filed under 5C?
The provision of reactive power by Chehalis was a jurisdictional service, as the commission has stated in Order 888. and affirmed in Order 2003, and that provision of service, Section 205C...
888 referred to reactive power?
Yes, it states that reactive power...
888 referred to everything in the electrical world.
Yes, it stated reactive power.
If it has an electron in it, it's named an 888.
My recollection is a very long order, so I'm sure somewhere, but yeah, so I see, that's the argument. Okay.
Yes, it states reactive power as an ancillary service. So the provision of reactive power by Chehalis to Bonneville was a jurisdictional service, and Section 205C states that all rates and charges and classifications and all contracts relating to those rates and charges need to be on file.
Does it have to be provided in interstate commerce?
Yes.
And is reactive power... I had the impression reactive power doesn't travel very far. Is that wrong?
Yes. It doesn't...
Yes, I'm wrong, or yes, I'm right?
Yes, you're correct. Huh. It doesn't travel far.
So then how do we know it's interstate?
Well, it's impossible to know...
Or is the idea that the interstate grid doesn't work without it?
Yes, correct.
That would be a thing.
And that the real power cannot be transmitted anywhere without that.
But there's nowhere, even in 888, that says that, is there? So we're doing Chenery violative things if we say that there's enough in 888 to make us know that this is something that should have been filed so as to become such a rate under D.
Well, these interconnection agreements were on file, and I think one of the differences here that may have caused confusion amongst the parties is that Bonneville Power Administration is a federal agency, and although certain provisions of the Federal Power Act apply to Bonneville, Section 205C does not, and we are not required to file our agreements, and we presume the parties that we do business with will comply with the rules and regulations for them.
So we don't, was the agreement that is now being said to contain the rate, which is now being said to be such a rate, was that agreement on file? I understood from the FERC Council it was not.
Maybe I
misunderstood.
Pardon? Correct. It was not.
It was not on file. Right.
Right.
So the only way we can get it to be such an agreement is to hold it should have been on file, right?
Yes.
And that would take 888 to hold it should have been filed? We'd have to look to 888.
888 in the Commission's precedence that stated this was an ancillary service and Section 205C.
What's the best precedent from the Commission that under 888 this should have been filed?
I believe the Commission affirms that it's a jurisdictional ancillary service, and from that, all schedules in the statute.
For us to find that this should have been filed. We'd have to first
I think you could look to the statute of Section 205C and the Commission's regulations that state that all jurisdictional services need to be on file, and that this 888 establishes this was a jurisdictional service. Unless the court has questions.
I see no further questions, so thank you, counsel. We have...
I just have one question. So imagine that were we to decide that we may have an argument here, wasn't raised by the Commission, so we have to send it back to the Commission to address this issue. Is there a difference between whether we vacate this or we just remand it? Does it make any difference whether we vacate the order or not?
I think it depends on what the court determines. If
the court were to rule based on a failure to explain, that is a Chenery basis.
If the court remands and requires the Commission to explain, if the Commission reaches the same result and...
Put their order back in.
And put the order back in.
That puts you back in the same position as far as you're concerned.
Right. I see. Okay. That's correct.
Is that saying it doesn't matter whether we vacate and remand or just remand?
Bonneville will be happy as long as we don't have to pay the unjust and unreasonable rate.
That's going to be up to FERC if we...
Yes.
Either way, I guess.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll round that up to 2 minutes, or bump it up to 2 minutes.
Thank you. I'm glad to have this rebuttal because there's been a lot of misinformation. The interconnection agreement was not required to be on file at FERC. Interconnection agreements by public utilities where the transmission provider is providing the interconnection service, that transmission provider is required to file the interconnection agreement. The generator that is being interconnected under the interconnection agreement is not required to file the interconnection agreement. And FERC has never held that it has does.
Is there, you have some case or regulation or something that says that?
There's no page or regulation. It's just, it's not a, it, the generator is not providing a jurisdictional service under the interconnection agreement. FERC has never held that it is providing
what,
a jurisdictional
service. What do you say to their argument that Order 888, if I read it, every word of it, I would find that...
You would not find anything on Order 888 on that.
There's nothing on reactive power? Nothing that says it's an
ancillary? Well, it describes reactive power as an ancillary service to a transmission service in a different context, actually. It does not, 888 does not address reactive power as part of an interconnection.
As whether it's a jurisdictional service or not, 888 is silent.
No, it does not say that. So this, there are two reasons. I mean, this agreement was not on file, the interconnection agreement, first, mainly because BPA, if it were a jurisdictional public utility, would have had to file it. But it was not a jurisdictional public utility, so it did not file it. But in any event, Chehalis, as the generator being interconnected, was never required to file Bonneville's interconnection agreement.
And perhaps more to the point, there's certainly nothing in the record that tells us that you had to file it.
Well, certainly there's nothing in the record that tells us we have to file it. That's true. But as a matter of law, we were not required to file it. We were not providing any
Shouldn't service. That, as an independent question, be sent back to FERC for another day?
I think
we don't have to decide that you didn't have to file it in order for you to win, do we?
No, I mean, you don't.
Resolution like of the question whether or not you had to file that, you can win a remand without us resolving that question either way, can't you?
Yes, but I want more than a remand. I want you to vacate. I want you to find that this could not have been a changed rate under the Federal Power Act.
Well, where you haven't cited any. You've told us just now, but there's no citation in your brief for the proposition that this isn't a jurisdictional service. There's no citation in your brief for the proposition that they didn't have to file. Everybody agrees they didn't.
Since they didn't make the argument in
yes,
their brief,
right.
You'd respond
I did
to.
Make the argument.
But
in
since
my brief.
Those arguments are not there, why isn't it more sensible for us to simply vacate and remand and get this back on another day if necessary, rather than try to decide a question that wasn't briefed and wasn't established in the record?
Well, it was brief. I mean, we said that it was not. You asked for, I'm sorry.
What would we look at for the prop to support your proposition?
Unfortunately, it's a negative proposition because FERC has never said that this has to be filed. Well,
where do
generator.
We find that in your argument?
It's in my argument. It's in my brief. I can give you a page number.
I recall that. Okay. That is
But yes, it is in my brief. But that's the point I wish you would take away, that this was not required. FERC has never given you any indication that it has to be filed. FERC, in its order, I mean, if FERC was trying to support
Certainly not order, in the order.
Yeah, I mean.
And I didn't find it in the brief.
That would have been all FERC had to do if it wanted to assert a changed rate, said, oh, yeah, this should have been filed as a 205C. But it didn't because it never requires these to be filed as 205Cs on behalf of the generator. So I would like you to find that there's nothing in 205C that was here. This has to be an initial rate, cannot be a change rate. I'd ask you to send it back to FERC, tell them to vacate, tell them they went beyond their lawful authority to suspend and subject an initial rate
okay.
to refunds.
You've told us what you'd like for more than your 2 minutes now, and so unless my colleagues have further questions, we'll go back and discuss whether we would like the same things or different things. Give us a recess. Case is submitted.